Well, as Foreign Minister Julie Bishop becomes the latest Liberal to declare her support for same-sex marriage, faith groups are pushing for stronger protection for religious freedom. This week, Human Rights Commissioner Tim Wilson convenes a meeting with more than 20 groups, religious and secular, to ask if freedom of religion is sufficiently protected in the law. As Tim Wilson tells us, the decisions made about exemptions for same-sex marriage could become a litmus test for religious freedom in all law.
The roundtable hasn't come from one suggestion. It's come from a consultation we held throughout 2014, talking to Australians about basic issues of liberty that affect people. And religious freedom was consistently a theme we picked up no matter where we went. What we found was a consistent unhappiness about the state of law and practice around how religious freedom was talked about and how it was respected in law. So we thought rather than trying to solve all the problems, we needed to get people together to have a much deeper discussion about the importance of religious freedom, its place in contemporary Australia, and how we might be able to come up with some solutions that don't seek to advance one group or the other, but focus on advancing the rights and freedoms of everyone.
Who's on the guest list? It's a pretty big group that you're going to gather in that room.
Well, we've invited about 24 different organisations. We couldn't invite everybody. This is the first of many round tables in this area. So we've invited representatives from different faiths based on their rankings on the census. We've also invited some people from secularist and humanist organisations because religious freedom necessarily has to involve people not having their faith. But we've already set up to have future roundtables to focus specifically on the issues affecting people of no faith and also of other affected communities.
Tim, you've used, as you say, the metric of the census. I do notice, though, that some of the secular groups are saying, well, 80% of the people on your invitation list are from faith groups. So is it lopsided from their perspective?
No, not at all, because in practice we could never get a perfectly accurate representation of the Australian community because a lot of faiths have far less than 1% of the population following them. The atheists and the secularists have been invited. They're actually roughly proportionate to the share of the Australian community, but that is not intentional. When it comes down to it, we asked from each organisation for a male and a female representative because we also are aware of the fact there's very different views and issues that affect people in religious freedom depending on gender. And we wanted to make sure that was factored in so that we could have a constructive and robust discussion.
What do you have to do, though, to qualify as a religion? I notice that you've included the Church of Scientology. I'm not sure where that ranks on the census, yet they're going to be at your round table. I mean, should I be surprised that the Scientologists are going to be there?
Well, the Scientologists fought a very significant High Court case about whether they were a religion or not, and the High Court essentially said they were. They weren't on our initial list, but they asked to be included, and we said yes. There are plenty of other groups who weren't initially on the list whom we added along the way because we thought they'd bring a unique perspective. Because one of the challenges we're going to have in this one day is trying to get a good understanding of where all the issues are depending on the faiths and their perspectives and where the common ground exists, because my, I guess, ambition or hope is that this is the first of a number of roundtables in this space, and we're going to have to find constructive parties who are interested in working together.
Tim, as Human Rights Commissioner, I mean, you've been pretty open about your objectives. Why is this a closed meeting? It sort of goes against everything you've done so far, where transparency has been very important to you.
Well, transparency is very important to me, but it's very clear that when we've spoken with religious faiths that they wanted to have a trust-based conversation, and there's a different conversation that can be held publicly and privately. This meeting isn't going to decide anything. It's not going to rewrite whole sections of law. What people wanted was that trust-based environment so they could talk openly and honestly. And if we have TV cameras in the room, people will measure what they say. That doesn't mean that future meetings won't be public, but we thought of this initial one to get that trust-based conversation. It was better to have it behind closed doors. And if there's something that comes out of it, that will, of course, be public.
Look, how much of this decision decision to hold the round table and indeed this extensive consultation that you have been doing is related to what appears to be the current trajectory towards the legal recognition of same-sex marriage?
Marriage obviously has an important role to play in this discussion, but it isn't the sole one. If you just look around the country in this past couple of weeks, we've had a significant debate in Victoria about adoption law and whether religious exemption should be given to Catholic adoption agencies. Go over to Western Australia and there's been a debate about whether a particular school is allowed to treat a student differently because their father happens to be in a same-sex relationship. We then had in different parts of the country debates about Islamic communities being able to develop mosques. So these issues go much further than marriage and are actually much more diverse than just the tension between religious communities and issues of sexual freedom and relationships.
It's almost certain, though, to be at least among the top three issues you discuss, I suspect.
Well, I think if you talk to Christian churches, that's true. I think if you talk to the Jewish community, they're concerned about harassment of people. I think that those similar issues turn up the Muslim community. So is it important? Yes. Will it be part of the conversation? I've no doubt. But it's not the sole focus. I do think the debate around marriage is really a litmus test for how we're going to treat religious freedom in law into the future, because we have a lot of laws that have given exemptions or protections for religious freedom that were drafted in the past 20 years. The debate around marriage and the role of religious freedom as part of that will probably set precedents, I think, that will be replicated for many years into the future.
Tim, you have put forward a couple of proposals on how the law might deal with this question of same-sex marriage. You have a proposal which, in essence, defines two forms of marriage. Is that right? Civil marriage versus religious marriage. Now, on the surface, a very sophisticated and appealing model. But in the spirit of religious freedom, how will the state decide what constitutes a religious marriage?
What in the end the state would do is do exactly what it does already, which is allow for the registration of ministers of religion to fulfil a civil act of marriage as well as a religious act of marriage. And so by using the existing mechanisms, you can actually provide for what I've dubbed religious marriage, or it could be called conscience marriage or something else, to remove the problem we have at the moment at the heart of the marriage debate, which is that people look to marriage as a religious institution, a legal institution, a cultural institution, and a social institution. And so long as we're all projecting our own value sets onto this institution, we're always going to get into a fight about what its purpose is and how to take it forward if we're going to recognise same-sex couples being able to marry. So what my suggestion was to split it so that it's clear that there is obviously a religious tradition, there's obviously a civil tradition, and then provide mechanisms for the religious tradition to be administered by ministers of religion.
How does your model accommodate the rights of small businesses that don't want to service same-sex couples? Because this has come up in the United States. It's become the sort of iconic model, the cake shop owner that simply doesn't want to provide the wedding cake to the same-sex couple.
The proposal I've put forward has multiple dimensions to it, which can include options for small businesses to say they want exemptions from anti-discrimination law. I'll be honest and say that I'm not a big fan of that option because I just don't think it's a big inhibitor on people's religious freedom to be, you know, required to provide a wedding cake or flowers or any other type of service. I do think there's a different discussion around civil celebrants and whether they should be compelled to oversee a marriage that they may have a private religious objection with. Part of the focus of what I've put up is how do we deal with these issues in a way that doesn't promote conflict? If we're going to move the country forward through this debate, we have to focus on how we can respect the rights and enlarge the rights and freedoms of everybody rather than having a zero-sum game approach, which just means that one group is seen to win and another group is seen to lose.
You know, however, that if you like the wrinkle in your argument, that some marriage providers must, if they're going to claim a religious exemption, must be consistent. So the Greek Orthodox baker must only, provide services on a consistent basis to religious ceremonies? Is that what you're... I'm using that as an example.
Yeah, no, it's a good example. That is one proposal I put up in the past deliberately to prompt discussion and to try and get an understanding about where the tensions were. I think in practice, if you're going to get an exemption, then you have to act consistent, which says if you really deeply, privately believe that marriage is a union between a man and a woman, then you can, of course, only serve weddings that are between a man and a woman. If you don't, and you start providing your mate on the side and those sorts of things, then you're not actually claiming what in the end is a conscientious objection. And we've accommodated conscientious objections in the past around trade union membership and, of course, around people's participation in armed conflict. The more I speak to people of very deep religious faith, this issue is equivalent to those examples. But I think in practice, it's a very small number of people. I think most people just look at it and go, I'm just going to get on with baking cakes or providing flowers and I've got better things to worry about.
Always good to speak with you. Tim Wilson is Human Rights Commissioner. Thanks for being with us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
A pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And you're with Andrew West here on RN.